Welcome to the RotoViz Radio Weekly Recap, where I, Kyle Dvorak at FF Kyle Kid, take you on a tour through the last week in RotoViz Radio podcasting. For those of you who don't know, RotoViz is a sports data and analytics site that publishes over 1,000 articles per year and has a suite of more than 20 proprietary apps. Go to rotoviz.com to check out the site. Before we get into it, I want to remind you that even though the NFL season is underway, you can still get your RotoViz NFL Pass for 30% off. This discount is for listeners of the podcast only, and it's available through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all of our NFL content, tools, and best of all, it supports this podcast. Again, be sure to get your 30% discount for an NFL Pass at rotoviz.com/podcast. Let's get into it. The first clip comes to you from the RotoViz Report, where hosts Anthony Amico and Blair Andrews break down the news from the past week in the NFL. This week they had guest Connor Allen on, and I just picked a few of their questions from No Shit, Shit, No that I thought they had great answers to this week. Take it away.
Ben Watson corralled 7 of 10 targets for 41 yards Sunday in the Ravens' Week 9 loss to the Titans.
This is another no shit for me, because he's just has gotten a lot of targets and been able to do so little with them besides just catching them. So he kind of just sits in. You know, it's kind of the dump-off option there in the middle and catches the ball for a few yards at a time. It's kind of getting standard for him.
Jeremy Maclin secured 8 of 9 targets for 98 yards Sunday in the Ravens' Week 9 loss to the Titans.
Shit, no. Jeremy Maclin is washed.
Alshon Jeffrey caught 6 of 11 targets for 84 yards and 2 touchdowns in the Eagles' Week 9 win over the Broncos.
Shit, no. I can't believe this still happened. I had gotten tons of questions about Alshon Jeffrey and playing him, and Aqib Talib got burned. Wentz is for real, but I don't think you can expect this out of Jeffrey consistently going forward. I mean, he's done a better job the last few weeks, but he's incredibly inconsistent. This is still one of the more shocking things of the week to me.
Ted Ginn caught 4 of 5 targets for 59 yards and a touchdown in Sunday's Week 9 victory over the Buccaneers.
No shit. Ted Ginn is now becoming efficient in an efficient offense, which makes sense. He still has the occasional drops like he has throughout his whole career, but he's been doing a lot better of a job with Drew Brees, and now with Willie Snead being a non-factor, you know, he's playing a pretty big role in the offense, and I think that's going to continue throughout the season.
Demaryius Thomas caught 8 of 12 targets for 70 yards and a touchdown in the Broncos' Week 9 loss to the Eagles.
No shit. I guess, but Demaryius hasn't caught a touchdown in 16 games, but the volume's there and it makes sense, but he was due for a touchdown at some point. There was the play before, I think he got stopped at the 1 yard line and everyone was freaking out, but it was about time for him and the volume was there. He had to get in the end zone eventually.
Orleans Darkwa rushed 16 times for 71 yards and caught 2 of 2 targets for 8 yards in the Giants' Week 9 loss to the Rams.
Shit, no. Orleans Darkwa is fine, but the Giants' offense is not good, and this isn't something that you can expect going forward, in my opinion.
T.Y. Hilton caught 5 of 9 targets for 175 yards and 2 touchdowns in the Colts' Week 9 win over the Texans.
No shit. T.Y. Hilton is good, and the Houston secondary was super disorganized, and they're really injured and really not that good this year. So seeing him with aggressive quarterback Jacoby Brissett, I mean, this was a fairly predictable breakout game in my opinion.
Marquise Lee caught 8 of 12 targets for 75 yards and a touchdown in Week 9 against the Bengals.
No shit, Marquise Lee is the volume option for the Jaguars, and Blake Bortles is actually looking competent with better game planning and actually being able to establish a run. So Marquise Lee's being able to do well as well with their improved efficiency.
Some notes on that clip. For the Jaguars, if you go to our Air Yard Screener app and bring up Marquise Lee and the next receiver in the Jaguars, Allen Hurns, you'll see that Marquise Lee right now has a respectable 24% of the team's targets, but a really high 39% of this team's air yards, whereas the second receiver, Allen Hurns, has only 25% of their air yards and only 18% of their targets. For reference, T.Y. Hilton has 1% lower of the team's targets at 23% and the exact same amount of the Colts' air yards at 39%. Moving on to our next clip, it comes from the RotoViz Radio, where Pat Corain and Sean Siegel had guest Pat Daugherty on to talk about the new-look Carolina Panthers.
Pat, Do you think we're going to see a faster, more dynamic Carolina Panthers offense, or is this mostly the result of facing a weak Atlanta defense this week?
Yeah, you know, I'd say it's pretty promising that the on-field results like immediately matched the rhetoric. You know, it didn't take 2 or 3 weeks or whatever. They did look more spread out. They did look a little more explosive, and you know, it was a kind of a team Falcons defense that's in disarray. But even if it was, you know, kind of schedule related, they've got a pretty soft schedule going forward. They have the Dolphins at home this week, then they play the Jets, then the Saints. We know the Saints are a little better, but yeah, I mean, pretty hard. I mean, I know it's one game, that's the smallest possible sample size, but yeah, I mean, I don't know if it could have gone any better, at least going by the trade that is, could have gone any better going by the Panthers' reasoning. You had Christian McCaffrey across the board set new season highs, 53 of 65 snaps. New season highs, not just in like rate stats, but also counting stats. Just so easily his best game of the year. You know, for that to come 4 or 5 days after the trade, I'd say is a good omen. And, you know, Curtis Samuel didn't bust any of the big plays, but he set a new season high for snaps. And I think he's going to be really good. And well, maybe not really good, but at least an improvement in running like those deep vertical routes they had Devin Funchess running. Or they just weren't hitting any of their deep plays they used to hit to Ted Ginn this year. And because all their really deep vertical routes down the field were going to Devin Funchess, and he just wasn't getting that separation. And if there's one thing Curtis Samuel should be able to do as a rookie, it's get separation down the field. So, yeah, I'd say for 1 week, I totally bought it, and I think it's definitely a game they can build on going forward, considering kind of how soft the schedule's looking.
You mentioned the snaps. This was only the second time all season that Samuel was in on more than 30% of the snaps. And you also mentioned the vertical element. In terms of different comps, you know, you look at our box score scout or listen to actual scouts talk about him, and Percy Harvin is the person he is most similar to, or at least was similar to, as a prospect. How much should we be concerned about the overlap in the skills between McCaffrey and Samuel, especially because, I mean, you mentioned that McCaffrey had, you know, sort of a mini breakout performance, which was awesome for all of us McCaffrey owners to see. But we still saw Newton missing badly when he was open in the end zone. Considering that Newton struggles on some of those routes that maybe they'd like to get McCaffrey and Samuel involved on, is it a concern that there will be too much overlap, that they'll cannibalize each other in terms of at least short-term fantasy value?
I'd say it's not a huge concern. I mean, the skill sets are different enough that I don't think there'll be like a ton of overlap. But if you're going to have concern, it's that they're both kind of guys, you know, that need their touches manufactured. And in the NFL, it can be hard enough to manufacture touches for one player. So then when you're trying to, when you have two guys who, you know, kind of aren't creating their own space, their own looks, then that does become a concern. And I think definitely McCaffrey is going to, he'll be taking the lead. I mean, he's going to be the guy they're working harder to get the ball. So if they have to, if Samuel can never create his own space and like they're having to work just as hard to create looks for him as they are for McCaffrey, then I'll be concerned. But I didn't see a ton of evidence of that so far yesterday. And I can definitely understand where you're coming from. But right now, it's not at the forefront of my mind when I'm thinking about the Panthers offense.
In reference to what they were saying about the skill sets of Curtis Samuel and Devin Funchess, using Roto's AYA app, Ted Ginn in his 2-year stint with Carolina was above average in AYA and passes beyond 15 yards to the right and to the middle, while being below average on the left side of the field. Through his career in Carolina, Devin Funchess has been just about average to the right of the field beyond 15 yards, above average through the middle of the field beyond 15 yards, and below average to the left. And of those three sections, his lowest amount of targets, 9, has come through the middle of the field. So I think if Curtis Samuel can even somewhat replicate the success Ted Ginn had, especially in the same sections of the field that Ted Ginn did, the offense could definitely see an uptick. This season, Ted Ginn's AYA when targeted to is above average in every section of the field except deep right, one of the many reasons to be playing him on a draft this week. Fantasy football fans, listen up. If you love fantasy football, then you need to try my new favorite app, Draft. Here's how it works. You do a draft that lasts for just 1 week, and there's no management. You just set it and forget it. Once you're done drafting, that's it. No trades, no waiver wire. Draft even takes care of last-minute injuries for you. Drafts start every couple minutes, so you can join one right now. And the best part? Play for cold, hard cash. Drafts start from just $1, so there's a draft for everyone. No salary caps, play in a real live snake draft, just like you play with your friends in a season-long league. Come and join me on Draft today. Download the app anytime, just search Draft in your app store, and join a game in minutes. Or play right from your computer on playdraft.com, whatever you want. For a limited time only, all new players get a free entry into Draft when you make your first deposit. But you have to use my promo code RVRadio. That's right, play a real money game for free, just for using my promo code RVRadio on your first deposit on Draft. Just search Draft in the App Store or go to playdraft.com and come play for free with my promo code RVRadio. This next clip comes to you from the High Stakes Lowdown, where Eric Balkman has a high stakes fantasy football player on as a guest every week. Enjoy.
What's the one guy that you were, at this point in the season, that you were really happy to get on a lot of teams? And then conversely, a guy that you wish you would have gotten more shares of?
I'll go with the guy that I wish I owned more, because that's fresh in my memory, is definitely Le'Veon Bell. There's probably plenty of times where he, you know, we took David Johnson. Obviously, you know, injuries, you can't account for that. But I was thinking Bell with that whole situation where he was holding out, making rap videos during, you know, the preseason. I thought it was going to be one of those, you know, possibly wasted seasons for him. But, you know, kind of like Allen Iverson says, practice doesn't matter. So Bell is probably the one guy that I regret not owning a little bit more of, especially when he was going like, in the main events, he was going like third pick overall once the Thursday night game happened, and Hunt was going, you know, one overall. The guy that we're happy having at this point, you know what? I don't know if we're really like in love or happy that, you know, any one guy that we're happy with, but it would probably be like, you know, Melvin Gordon. We're definitely overweight on him. He's been a pretty good producer. We're overweight on Todd Gurley. He's another guy that it seems like he's worked out. But I think it's more, this year has been more about, we've done a good job, I think, of avoiding some of the early round, what we call trap players. So, you know, we avoided some of those guys like DeMarco Murray. You know, we weren't on, you know, Devontae Freeman, you know, guys like that that we kind of projected to, you know, be disappointments this year.
We have two more weeks left in the regular season for the Football Guys Players Championship and the FFPC main event. For those of the teams that you have, Nelson, that are sort of on the fringe of making the playoffs, teams that are, you know, maybe right in the middle of the pack that have a chance to sneak into the playoffs with a good couple of next weeks, are you taking any bigger lineup risks or, you know, waiver wire risks in order to give that team a little bit extra of explosive push to try to make sure that you sneak into the playoffs, or are you just going to play them out how you have been the majority of the season to see if they can get in that way?
Yeah, absolutely. That's one thing that Dave and I are going to be on the phone all night tonight and then pretty much all day tomorrow, because, you know, this is the time of the year where we kind of did a quick snapshot of our team portfolio. And then in the football guys, we're looking at about 111 teams that still are in the conversation, that have, you know, some are in, some have an outside shot of getting in. So those teams that have an outside shot of getting in, we're going to have to make some hard decisions as far as the roster and, you know, what to do as far as, you know, lineup decisions, playing guys with higher upside.
That was guest Mike Kazuma. This next clip comes to you from the RotoViz Mailbag, which is hosted by Jeremy Hart, and this week the guest was Pat Corain. They're talking about AJ Green, who I think is one of the more interesting players this year, because even though he is third in the NFL in weighted opportunity rating, or Whopper, from Josh Hermsmeyer's work on air yards, he's only eighth in PPR points, meaning he might have some room to grow. Here's their take on it in a dynasty context.
I Next one, Dynasty. I'm an AJ Green owner, but not a true contender. What can I expect to get for him in terms of players or picks? It seems like his market might be lower than it should be, despite the quarterback situation, the offensive line, etc. He's approaching the age cliff, and while I don't like to lean on examples like Larry Fitzgerald as outliers, I'm the type that does like to get out from under a guy before the steady decline, if I can.
Yeah, so I feel like if you're going to sell Green for kind of that big prime level, you know, like three first payoff or something, like, I think that's gone right now. Or it's just, it's not available right now. He's 29. He's having his worst season since his rookie year. That's true, actually, even if you throw out the last game where he was ejected. It's especially true if you include the last game, which, you know, did hurt people because he would have been in your lineup. So, I don't know that you're necessarily going to be able to get that big time cash out unless you're, you know, if your trade deadline's a couple weeks away, he has one of those monster AJ Green games, which he can have. Maybe you can, get that kind of, payoff from a contender. But I feel like that window's been kind of trending earlier and earlier. Like, you might have had to sell him even before last year to get that kind of, payout. But having said that, I would still want a big payout to get, you know, if I was going to sell AJ Green, I would still want those kind of early first plus, multiple mid first level, first type of value. You know, Josh Hermsmeyer had a piece this offseason I thought was really good, talking about how the wide receiver peak in terms of consistency may come later than we think. These years are actually, I think, prime years for wide receivers in Dynasty, 29, 30, 31. These are years that AJ Green, who hasn't actually been like a monster performer, he's never had a season above 20 PPR points. He's been that like 17 to 19 PPR points per game type of guy. I think he can hold that type of range up for definitely through the next like 3 years, maybe four or five years. So I would be fine holding a guy like that. I think one move, if you're getting a little skittish on Green, that you could try to do, you know, you're saying you're not really a contender. I'd wonder about maybe trying to move to A-Rob plus, right? If you got a guy with Allen Robinson who's a contender, particularly if you wait another, if you can wait another week, so at least Green isn't coming off an ejection, then you could try to move to A-Rob there, given his ACL tear. What do you think about that, Jeremy?
Yeah, that's good analysis. I definitely like that play there as well. This is an interesting one as well because I was faced with this dilemma. Well, not mid-season, but I contemplated moving AJ Green in a particular league this offseason. I opted against it, and normally this is the time when I would move a player like AJ Green so I could try to get, if not the three first-round value, the at least two first-round instead of three first-round, and then plus another piece there. I think I should have done it, but I didn't do it there. But yeah, this is a tough one because there's no real right answer to this one. I really like the A-Rob play on that one. But yeah, I think you're just going to have to wait till he scores some more touchdowns on this one.
Closing us out is guest host Anthony Miko and host Heath Kruger of On the Daily with some contrarian thoughts on different games and teams to stack this coming weekend in DFS. Have a listen.
I think I'm looking at spots that I think there's going to be some teams that people are going to really hammer hard in tournaments, and I'm really going to try to go the opposite way. So I think the first spot I really recognize that I think I'm going to go after is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers passing game. You had mentioned before that Ryan Fitzpatrick, he had been mentioned a few times by our mutual friend Grant Barfield on Twitter. I think in this spot against a New York Jets secondary to wire, this team as a whole has been really quite inspiring given what they've done with so little to work with on both sides of the ball, but they still remain quite vulnerable against the pass. Ryan Fitzpatrick does have these occasional blow-up games. You know, he threw for 290 yards and three touchdowns previously this year against the Arizona Cardinals. And I know Mike Evans is out, but this could be a spot to where you could really go with a a really contrarian stack of, you know, Fitzpatrick, DeSean Jackson, Adam Humphries, or maybe even, you know, one of the other options that we just really aren't considering, maybe perhaps one of the tight ends in Cameron Bray or O.J. Howard. I think that could be a spot to where, you know, you really get kind of one of those blow-up spots, and you're not going to have a lot of people on them. Another one I thought was a little interesting, and it has me hesitating a little bit more, is the Tennessee Titans passing game against the Cincinnati Bengals. Marcus Mariota, I think it's fair to say he's been quite a disappointment this season, but we still know that Mariota himself, with Corey Davis back and, you know, all the weapons they have in that passing game, can be quite potent at certain times. So if you're going to get that passing game in a nice spot at a low ownership percentage, why not just game stack them as well? And, you know, kind of like a really just buying into a spot to where you're not going to have anyone really looking their way, just given just how many nice spots there are really just across the board in so many other games. So,
yeah, all great stuff, Heath. And I think especially the Fitzpatrick play is one that is almost sure to be low owned, just because I think that, you know, people see that Evans is out and they'll say, well, Evans isn't in, so there's no way you can stack Fitzpatrick. But I mean, the other guys in this offense are still really good. You know, and the Jets secondary has maybe been a little bit better than we expected, but still not great. And I think that that's definitely exploitable.
That's a wrap for this week. But before I go, we have to get into the segment of book club, book Rotoviz book club. But for things I read on Rotoviz, that's definitely the name. Yeah, we established this last week. If you didn't listen, listen to last week's episode. We established the name for this segment. It was the thing I just said. So the first thing I read is Todd Burrows' Best Ball Leaderboard, in which he breaks down the best ball landscape. It does a good job detailing how things are working differently in best ball leagues right now than they are in standard leagues. The other thing I'm reading is John Lipinski's Terminator series, where he details his journey through the FFPC's high-stakes Terminator tournament, where every week you have to get rid of a player on your team. Be sure to get to the end, where he has to choose which player he cuts. Easily the best part of the article every week. That's going to do it for this week's Rotoviz Radio Weekly Recap. You can find me on Twitter at FFKyleKid. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you for listening to the Rotoviz Radio Weekly Recap. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can always get a hold of us at rotovizradio.gmail.com and catch us on Twitter at rotovizradio. And you can always support the show by going to rotoviz.com/podcast and subscribing with a 30% discount.